And our special guest tonight, Russell Targ. You know, it's kind of funny because when I changed what I was thinking that I saw, I went to that Buddha structure and the belly. I kept thinking about this huge belly, which was probably the globe that I saw originally. So I should have stuck to my original thought. I did not. Lex has accumulated some of the fast blasts. Let me very quickly run through them. Don thought it was a compass. Joseph thought it was a tennis racket. Lori thought it was a sword. Diana thought it was a printer on a chair. Louise thought it was a book or a box. Natalie said it was a coffee mug. Craig thought it was a wooden chair with a carving on the back of it. Celeste says it's a statue or a figure. Mark thought it was a laptop in a chair. Carlita thought it was... No, she says someone stole money. Can we find it? Well, that'll be a question later. Cheryl thought it was an oriental black hat. Mark said it was a rust-colored thing of some sort. Pam thought it was a key. Emmanuel thought it was a steaming cup of tea. Jim thought it was a lamp or something like that. And it goes on and on and on. Nobody really hit globe yet. Nobody saw that. PJ thought it was a crystal or glass. And Mark thought it was a Kleenex box. Mark is sending in 40 different things. Mark, you only allowed one. And it goes on and on and on. Anyway, we'll come back with your phone calls and more with Russell Targ on Coast to Coast AM. And Russell, how do you get better at remote viewing?
See, I would comment that I had a couple of very good people suggesting things here. Somebody had a crystal ball on a stand, on a tall stand.
It looks like a globe.
And somebody else had a solar-powered sphere that was rotating. And I think I mentioned before somebody had a trumpet, a gold trumpet, and the base of my stand is exactly a convex pointy.
Like a trumpet would be.
That's right. So I got I would say a third of the people who I looked at on my screen did pretty well with this. So this is it's a valid target. And what you always have to do is steer clear of naming the things. That is, children are generally more psychic than adults, but they don't really have the words to say, I see a spherical object on a tall wooden stand on a convex metal base, so forth. They want to name that, as we all do, and we don't teach people to be psychic, but we teach them to be more discriminating in what they say.
I mean, for example, Russell, I see you right now with a lot of books around you, and for some reason I see a fireplace there. I don't know why, but I do.
Well, I've got a lot of books around me, but the fireplace is in another room. I'm in my sort of cozy cave here. Got lots of books, and unaccountably, this large globe standing on a wooden chair, but I don't have a fireplace for you.
Is there something that looks like a fireplace? Maybe some kind of piece of furniture, because it looks dark in there.
Well, my desk looks like a fireplace. And then I have a regular wooden desk with a knee hole, and the knee hole is dark. So that if you were behind, if you sailed in here behind the globe and looked toward me, then what's in front of you is something that looks a lot like a fireplace, because it's a sizable wooden desk with a rectangular knee hole, and that's all dark inside.
Yeah, that's I'm seeing this dark hole-like structure. I don't see any fire coming out of it, but it looked like to me that it could have been a fireplace.
And so, that's, again, why it's so important to draw. We can't draw over the radio.
That's
but
right.
When you do these, it's very important to get it on paper so you see where you say that I see something like a fireplace. And I say, well, why is it like a fireplace? And they say, well, there's a square hole where the fire would be, and then on either side of it, and then there's a mantel shelf. Sounds like you got promise.
Keep training me, Russell. Let's use some new technology and go to Don in West Hollywood on our Skype line to get us started here. Go ahead, Don.
Hi, okay. Well, for starters, I'm in West Hollywood right across the street from the Coast Playhouse, which is the theater I manage. And I was in my car in the parking lot of the supermarket at, I think, 11:30 is when your guest started describing just this experiment and that he was first going to get the object.
Okay.
It was the first time he mentioned that, not when he'd gotten to the more lengthy description.
Right.
And I immediately just globe came into my mind, and I went into the supermarket on my way home after leaving the Coast Playhouse, the theater I run, and then listening just now, hearing him say globe, just I think the combination of, you know, being such a fan of Coast to Coast, and that I manage a business called Coast, but also I thought it was the very first moment when he said, I'm reaching for this object.
Well, good for you. That is one of the things that this whole exercise shows, is that remote viewing and psychic abilities is natural. You don't have to pay thousands of dollars to learn to be psychic. But what I'm doing, and I'm not teaching anybody how to be psychic over the air, I'm just setting the stage, saying, don't guess, don't name it. Honor your first impression and describe that, and that will get you started there. For example, one of the things that's interesting is when I first started talking about remote viewing, I was thrilled that there were 500,000 sites. If you go to Google, I used to say you could search on remote viewing in quotes of the 500,000 people, 500,000 pages on Google. Then when I wrote my next book, I was really thrilled that there were 1 million pages on Google.
Yeah.
And with my last book, there were 2 million, and now there's 2.5 million. So we still don't know for sure how it works, and we still take a lot of criticism who don't believe in psychic abilities. But there's now 2.5 million pages on Google, largely from people who are teaching remote viewing or who are having experiences. So it's really to help people like that that I wrote this book, The Reality of ESP, because I have a whole section telling people how to get in touch with their psychic abilities, how to do in their lives what we did on the air tonight.
Russell, did you ever meet my aunt? I know Ingo was very close with
her. I corresponded with her, but I never met her. But I was good friends with her psychic pal, Dora Kunz.
Yes.
So I know Dora Kunz quite well. And it's because of that connection that I went to the Theosophical Society to publish this nice book.
The family thought she had lost it when she basically changed her psychiatric practice into exclusive study of ESP and sensory perception. And they couldn't understand it. She would call me once in a blue moon, and we would talk about this ability.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I didn't know her. Sure.
Yeah.
What is her famous book?
Breakthrough to Creativity.
Yeah, I read that, and that's a terrific early book about intuitive diagnosis.
Yeah.
One of the things that I can tell you is that it requires a special ability, in my opinion, to be a psychic healer or a spiritual healer. But much easier than remote viewing or healing is intuitive diagnosis. We talked about at the very beginning, the idea of doctors doing snap diagnosis.
Yes.
I had a housemate for a while who was a medical intuitive, and she encouraged me to learn to do intuitive diagnosis. And she would bring me the names of three people in envelopes, and I would just hold up an envelope, and I've got very successful, surprisingly able to describe what was wrong with the people, and sometimes beyond what my teacher even knew. In one case, I'll just tell you one case. I held up an envelope, And I see this is a very athletic-looking woman, but she seemed sad, and there's something arcing and sparking in one of her shoulders.
Huh.
And my friend said, I have no idea. I don't know. Basically, she said, I don't know what you're talking about. She's a professional tennis player, and it turned out she lived in Florida that she had a shoulder separation, had a metal plate put in her serving arm, and that's what I saw from California, arcing and sparking, piece of metal that had recently been put in.
See, I think remote viewers are much more legitimate, Russell, than some psychics. Now, I've met some psychics, and I think they're pretty good. Joseph Jacobs comes to mind as one of the good ones, but I've been to some events where someone will stand up and the psychic will say, your mother is dead. And the girl will say, no, she's not dead. She's still alive. Oh, your father's dead. And the girl will say, yes. But, you know, over a process of 20 questions, you're bound to hit some of them if you question someone that way. And sometimes when I hear that, I say, man, I don't know if this person's real. What do you think of all that?
I think it's a tough way to make a living. Because sometimes you're on and sometimes you're not on, and you're standing up there with your face hanging out, and you've got to say something.
Yeah.
And Joe McMonagle, who's probably the best remote viewer, we trained him, he came to us and became a great remote viewer. He was one of the six who was discovered in our training program. And he does fantastically accurate remote viewing. He found a downed Russian airplane. I mean, that's one of the other miracles in my catalog of miracles, where a Russian reconnaissance plane was downed crashed in northern Africa. And he was able to draw a map. And so I see the mountains on the right, and there's a village on the left, and there's a river. And the plane is down between the village and the river. It drew a little circle on the outline map of Zaire, and they were able to find the airplane. We beat the Russians to it. That was a great success of remote viewing. And
amazing.
Jimmy Carter actually, at a press conference, gave us congratulations. He says the psychics actually found the airplane.
I love it. Now, who were the six? Can you mention who they were? I have my guesses, I think.
I can't do that. Joe is the only one who's greatly surfaced. I don't want to uncover.
Okay. I would say Paul Smith, but maybe he came later?
He came later. He was more in the Skip Atwater and Paul Smith were on the management side. They were not trained by me. They were both trained by Ingo.
Okay, and David Morehouse, maybe?
Nope. One of the other guys has surfaced and is known, but Mel Riley was another one. I don't know if you even know him.
No.
But Mel has gotten some press, but the other four people are one's passed away, and the other three are not public people, so I don't want to identify. I'm pretty forthcoming, but I have some problem. I can't identify people who haven't surfaced.
How do you use this, Russell, for yourself in your day?
I should also say that we never killed any animals. We did not look at a goat and kill an animal. That was not. Yeah. If that ever happened, that wasn't something we were involved in, nor our little group.
All right. But do you use this in your everyday, day-to-day activities?
Well, I use the fine things. So I'm pretty good at closing my eyes and visualize. The question I ask myself is, where is the thing that I'm going to eventually find? What are the place look like where it is? So I'm pretty good at doing that. I'm also a meditator, and I'm interested in residing in that spacious place that's available. I mean, millions and millions of people meditate, and the non-meditators can't figure out why they're doing that. And they, but so many people are continue to do it. The presumption is the meditators aren't all stupid. There must be some payoff. And the payoff is that it feels good, it quiets your mind, you live longer, and you're healthier, and you have psychic experiences. So as you follow this path outlined by Padmasambhava, the 8th century, you move from worrying about defending the story of who you are. Essentially, you give up defending your business card and move into a spacious, what they call naked awareness, which mm-hmm. is moving out into non-local space-time. That's available, and there's a vast literature in the vast Buddhist literature, which I cover in my book, The Reality of ESP. It might make some of the Buddhists mad because they don't talk about it, but there's a vast Buddhist literature about psychic abilities and how to do that, and I describe that at some length because they really had it first. At the time of Christ, the Buddhists had extensive repertoires of psychic abilities, communicating with deceased people, because there's no time. That is, at the time of Christ, the Buddhists were talking about how your awareness is infinite in space and time. That's pretty advanced thinking. Consequently, just because somebody has died, it doesn't mean you can't communicate with them, because they're timeless.
That's true. Let's go to Renee in Riverside, California. Go ahead, Renee.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I'm wondering, I've had some strange experiences, and I kind of wonder if I can develop it any further, because a part of me kind of finds it fun. But I've had some boyfriends in my life that I have dreams about them at night, seeing them somewhere, doing something, talking to somebody, sometimes cheating on me. That kind of thing. And I go into, and this one particular person, I'd go into work and there he'd be. And I'd say, oh, you know, I had this really strange dream about you. Tell him all about it. And he'd get so mad. Say, why are you stalking me? Why are you following me? I think it had ended up breaking us up, because he'd be on the phone. And when he'd hang up, I'd say, oh, that was so-and-so. And he said this and this. He'd get so mad. But
well,
I don't know why those things only come at night.
Yeah, I can completely confirm that, because I've had exactly that kind of experience where I actually physically experienced, I don't want to dwell on it, that somebody was betraying me with another person.
Hold on, Russell. We're going to take the break. I want you to finish that up when we come right back. Talking about out-of-body experiences, we're going to be talking with Rick Stack on our next Coast to Coast program. Out-of-body adventures, 30 days to the most exciting experience of your life. So we'll be talking to him and, of course, special things during our first hour on Coast to Coast AM. Russell Targ with us. Russell, before we take some final calls, I'll let you finish up on your discussion.
Well, I think that I probably said more than I need, but as you're open to these out-of-body experiences, you can get all sorts of surprising information, both physical, sexual, visual. And I have to comment, somebody's just written to me, says, I promise you I saw the globe before you mention it, and the globe is on a chair where a black cat is usually sitting, and that's absolutely correct.
Perfect.
My little companion cat sits on the chair. In fact, my wife and I were worried that the cat would come and knock the globe off. So I got a lot of psychic people have written in.
All right, let's go to Steve in Albuquerque, New Mexico, east of the Rockies. Steven, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And I've listened to your show for many years, I guess since the mid-90s, and I really appreciate all your work.
You are welcome.
I've listened to Art Bell. I guess Art had it on in the mid-90s or earlier?
Earlier.
Yeah. When did he start?
Oh, gosh, way, way back. Picked up by a few stations. And then the show started off as a political show. And then
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and then it evolved into what it is today.
Yes. Well, it's been a nice involvement, and I appreciate your work, and I appreciate your guest tonight. I just wanted to report that the very first thing I saw was also a globe with a base, but it wasn't. I guess it's an old antique world you have there.
It's not so antique. It's sort of darkish, but it's colorful.
Well, the globe I saw wasn't the world. It actually was a crystal ball on a wooden base. But the interesting thing I thought you might want to account for and talk about a little bit more about remote viewing is that I saw that instantly without thinking.
Good for you.
And then I started thinking, and I got off track. But the crystal ball always came back immediately.
Well, the crystal ball's a good guess because it's right under an overhead lamp, so this thing is quite shiny.
Oh, really?
If you just came in and got a flash, you'd see a globe on a base, and that's it.
Well, I certainly realize what you mean when you talk about trying to think too much is damaging if you
yes.
start to analyze.
Yeah, what you want to do is get on page. It's like recalling a dream. I hadn't thought of that before because somebody asked me, how do you tell if a dream is real? And what you've got to do is write down the dream you have before you get out of bed, before you move any large muscles, so you have a record on paper. May not make any sense, but get it on paper before you forget it.
Right. If you start analyzing and thinking about it too much, it seems like the dream just disappears.
That's right. That is, it was known in the 8th century that naming things and grasping onto them makes them go away.
Yeah.
The Buddhist teacher said we give all the meaning there is to everything we experience. If you want to know it the way it is, you have to let go of it and just describe the images.
Well, that's exactly what I experienced tonight. I had listened to your comment about overanalyzing or analyzing at all, and boy, it brought it home to me tonight that's the essence of trying to do some remote viewing. May I ask a final question, and I'll give
sure, Steve. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
And this is in reference to Major Ed Dames.
Yes.
I'm sure you're well familiar with his work.
I am.
And I've listened to him on Coast to Coast mainly over the years. And recently, his most recent appearance had to do with the kill shot of the sun. Is that true?
Well, he has lots of bad news of various things that come in. So let me tell you my take on Ed Day. Remote viewing is very easy to teach. In fact, I have a workshop I'm doing with Stephen Schwartz at the Omega Institute the end of August. So Schwartz and I will be teaching for a week, and we get good reviews. So a number of people have asked me, how can they practice? They can come and join us at the Omega Institute. With regard to Ed Danes, remote viewing is easy to teach. He has a lot of material, and I'm sure that he's very successful in teaching, because it's not so hard to do. You give people permission to do it, and they do it. On the other hand, I've heard him on the air many, many times with forecasts and remote viewing, and I've never heard him say anything that was correct. That he has lots of scary, detailed forecasts and descriptions.
They are scary. The one he had when he was on with me, Russell, was when the millionaire Stephen Fawcett went down in his plane, and he was very, very accurate in pinpointing where that plane went down.
Oh, good.
When they couldn't find him for weeks and weeks and weeks, maybe months. But he said he went down in the Sierra Nevadas, in the mountains there, and he was pretty close.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, he was pretty close. I assume he was the second evolution with all this? I mean, did you work with him at all?
I did not.
Okay. Next up. All right. Thanks for the call, Steve. Let's go to Jeff in Culver City, California. There you go,
Good
Jeff.
Mr. Targ. Yes, people who can remote view are truly gifted, despite what the religious fanatics say about God and Satan only having those powers. But since the observers must rely on the information coming from the viewer, there's no way to know exactly or prove that the information is true or correct. My question is there any way that an observer can remote view exactly what the remote viewer is seeing or doing to verify or authenticate the information? And I'll take your answer off the air.
That's an interesting question. Not generally, but I've had the experience with a teacher, Barbara Brennan. I'm glad I remembered her name. She's a wonderful teacher.
Hands-on healing, right?
Hands-on healing. And I visited her once and was talking about remote viewing, and she said, well, I've hidden something in the next room. Can you describe it? And I said, well, I don't really do that. I'm not a psychic. And she said, yes, you are. You can do that. So I sort of quieted my mind and started to describe it. She said, there now, I can see you're exactly in the right place. If you just describe what you're seeing, that's the right answer, because I can see that you're looking at the right thing. So I have to assume that she telepathically knew exactly what I was looking at. And even though that this is sort of a hard-to-believe, one-of-a-kind thing, she did that so accurately that I was really shocked. And then I did describe her a little object. My impression of what was going on is exactly as though she was reading my mind and said, stop there, you've got the right one. So that's the answer to that question the gentleman asked.
All right, let's go next to Lex in Williamstown, New Jersey. Hi, Lex. You there? Well, you would be if I hit the button. There you go. Hi, Lex.
Okay, I'm here. Thank you. And I did guess on the object. I first thought of a box, some kind of a jewelry box maybe, and I discounted it, and I thought of an apple. So I drew the apple, and then I went back to the box, and some ways down on my paper, I drew a nondescript box. So I don't know how close I was. But I do have a question for your guest, and that is what happened to the body of bin Laden. I had a vision of when I was hearing the news what happened, but I don't know. Is it a gut feeling? And then also the same with JonBenet Ramsey, the little girl. The same thing of a gut feeling, but I have no proof of whatsoever. So have you any thoughts on what occurred?
No, I believe it makes perfect sense that they dumped him overboard because they don't want anybody to become a celebrated site. So dumping him overboard was the right thing to do, in my opinion. And it is quite believable.
Let me read you this, Russell, that came in up to me 30 minutes before you told us on the air that it was a globe. This comes from Brennan James, and I'm not going to give Brennan's last name, but he writes, I see a solar-powered silver globe that rotates. The globe is inlaid with stones. The globe appears rather decorative. The globe was, I even went specific to say it was purchased at a certain store, and it is on a silver pedestal.
Yeah, I got that. I mentioned that earlier. I thought that's terrific that he had this large shiny.
Was that the same guy we're talking about?
Yeah, okay. Large, shiny, rotating globe. I've not done this on the air before. I'm very happy we did it exactly this way because, first of all, it conveys the idea that this actually works. And this works much better than the choosing one of five, which basically doesn't work. So I think we sort of luckily zeroed in on a very good protocol to make something happen and let lots of people experience psychic abilities. And I describe how to find a friend to practice this in my new book, The Reality of ESP. I have a whole chapter describing how to separate the psychic signal from the mental noise.
It's a buddy system, isn't it, for training?
Exactly, a buddy system. You find a trusted friend who will bring you little objects, and you then quiet your mind, and it's not double blind. You can't publish it, but your friend will then guide you to describe this and describe that. And the next week, she'll come and have three bags, and you grab one, and she won't know which object you did. And she'll assist you the same way, and then it's a double blind. So you can go quickly from this friendly telepathic experience. You see, if I tell you that I've got a globe here that I'm sending you the information telepathically in addition to your bopping into my office. But when you do it the next time and I don't know what it is, then you have to do it yourself.
Let's go to Linda in Windsor, Canada. Hey, Linda, thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. I am so glad you're on tonight. First of all, George, I was close like you were with an object.
Yeah.
But I saw something round. But anyway, it's there within us. I wanted to tell your guest they're wrong because I have found that remote viewing in the Bible. Elisha, the prophet, did that with his servants. He was miles away, and he said, what were you doing? And they said, oh, we were doing this. He says, no, you didn't. I saw you with my spirit, meaning light. So yeah. It is biblical. So is reincarnation. I've studied this for over 30 years in the Bible. It gets me mad when these so-called Christians put it down. There is divine esotericism. It is the gifts of God is incredible. So you're right on, and we should be using it.
I agree.
Oh, definitely. So I want to thank you.
The reason they're called prophets is because they have psychic abilities. The idea of people knowing the future has been with us from Greek and biblical times.
In remote viewing, Russell, when you go back at the past events, and let's say you're looking horribly for a body of a victim, and you find the body of the victim, can you go back and see who did it? Or only can you only find where the body is?
Some people are able to go back and describe the historical
event.
Events as a kind of psychometry. I was once called upon. Pella Hammond was working with the police, and they called her to describe a murder scene. And she didn't like it. It was sort of gruesome, so she called me. And I said, I've never done anything like that. She said, well, I mean, the joke is just tell me what you see. Don't tell me whether you like it or not. Just tell me what you see. So I said, well, I see this sort of overweight guy. He seems to be taking his head off. No, he's taking his head. He's wearing a wig. That's what it is. He's a completely bald guy who is wearing this curly dark wig. And that's what I get. He took off his wig and put on his hat. That was it. And that was enough so the police in a lineup could threaten the guy and say, we know that you were wearing your wig and took it off when you killed the girl. And he was so stunned that he confessed. That's all I saw. I'm very bad at describing people facially anyway, but I got sort of the key item just popped into my head because it was such a strange thing. It took me a moment to figure out what I was actually looking at. But these momentary flashes are what everybody has. And in a remote viewing class or following a protocol, as I describe in my book, you learn to treasure and value those little flashes that come in. And before you know it, you're a remote viewer.
Let's go to Richard in Sacramento, California. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hello. First of all, I got to say that gives me a whole new reinforcement and interpretation of the Friday night prayers or prayer list that you do. My question is, when you had described the object you had, well, first of all, let me just say real quick, my immediate image in my head while I'm driving down the road was the old statue of a Indian on a horse over his spear. Then I also had three images at once: the Indian on a horse, a snow globe, I had no idea of scale, and a black Christmas present with gold wrapping.
Snow globe would be a good representation.
Yeah, and then the statue being the base, I guess. But
before you go, I want to say one word about the religious issue. I'm neither in favor of religion or opposed to it. It just has nothing to do. It is neither necessary or sufficient for remote viewing. It just had nothing to do with remote viewing. So my hobby horse is that I don't want to make remote viewing the prisoner of either fundamentalists or people who hate religion. It's just an ability. And it makes it unattractive to people if they think it's from the devil, or if they think that they have to eat porridge at the feet of their guru. It's the reason I enjoy teaching remote viewing is it's very easy to teach.
And the old saying, practice makes perfect, Russell?
Absolutely.
It does. Russell, I want to thank you for being on the program. You're always a great guest and just a superb human being.
Very happy to have the opportunity. It's a pleasure to be with you. I had a good time.
Russell's website, by the way, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, ESPresearch.com. We're talking about his latest work, and it is a good one, The Reality of ESP, with some techniques in there, what you can do, how you can practice, and everything else. On our next program on Coast to Coast AM, a little bit more on out-of-body adventures before we then get into our Friday night show with all kinds of things. You never know what to expect on a Friday-Saturday type show on Coast to Coast AM. So if you need to email me, that's also george@coasttocoastam.com. Thanks for listening tonight. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Pundit, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.